And welcome back to the latest edition of the Fantasy Alarm Fantasy Baseball Podcast. But of course, this is the off-season edition. First and foremost, little teaser for the episode today. We're going to be going over the state of the American League. But before that, we did cover the National League last week. Make sure you check that out at fantasyalarm.com or wherever you get your podcast. But of course, with me as always, at the Sellsman on Twitter. So Matt Sells, other than freezing where you are, how is everything going for you?
Not too bad. Currently, I know the USPS and Amazon and whatever are all busy with the holidays. Hopefully, everybody's having lovely holidays, no matter what you celebrate, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas, Festivus, you know, all sorts of stuff. Currently trying to sort out what exactly they're doing with some of my packages. And yes, I showed you video proof that my front door is frozen here in Lincoln, Nebraska. So it's pretty cold. But you know what'll warm me up? Talking some baseball, because we're like, what, 3 months from the start of spring training, just about.
Somewhere right around there. Yeah, usually it's right around my birthday.
Spring training games are February 25th, I believe. So we're like almost 2 months from spring training games.
Yep. I mean, I'd love to make like a little free agency joke that everyone's probably heard before. I don't even know if we can call it the hot stove anymore, because a lot of the big name players have signed. And I think at this point, any signings are more of like the lukewarm stove, maybe, because it's fine guys, couple ones that are interesting left. But, you know, there's no more boil? Judges.
Is it a parboil stove? Is that what we're
going Yeah, with? It's not quite hot, but it's a little more than room temp. You know, it's not quite room temp, but a couple signings we have to touch on last week, because, of course, Murphy's Law has it is once you record about something, things must happen afterwards. So a couple quick signings just to touch on from the National League. So once again, make sure you check out the full State of the National League podcast that Matt and I did last week. Check that out wherever you get your podcast or fantasyalarm.com. But arguably the biggest one, Dansby Swanson heads to the Cubs. Saw some tweets. Sounds like the Cubs were his kind of top spot all along, if it wasn't almost going to be Atlanta, just from what I've seen with some stuff. But we talked about the Cubs lineup, and it needed another – I want to say impact bat, because Swanson definitely can be that, as we've seen in Atlanta. They needed help. And at the very least, you know, if Windy City, the winds are blowing right, you got to like that for Swanson's power production. But at the very least, other bats in that Chicago lineup, you almost have to feel a little bit better about heading into the season, because there's at least a little bit more help in that lineup now.
There is a little bit more help in that lineup. I was talking to a neighbor of mine who's a huge Cubs fan, and he said he wanted Swanson over Correa anyway, which obviously savings wise, sure, but in terms of player, I think Swanson's game actually projects better long term than Correa's does, just in terms of the type of player he is. I think he can stick it short longer than Correa can. So yeah, I like that. I like that signing for the Cubs. They needed some help somewhere. Look, they're still not going to be competitive for that division this year, even if everything goes right. But it is getting the key signings in place now before some of their pretty good prospects. They do have a pretty good farm system in terms of bats coming up. So, you know, this is setting the stage for that. But I still think they're a third or fourth place team in the Central this year. Maybe closer to third now with the signing of Swanson, but they're still behind the Cardinals and Brewers.
Yeah, when you look at Swanson too, in the MLB free agent tracker that we have, pretty much breaking down all the notable signings that happened, Matt and I split that. When you look at Swanson, some interesting things. He makes a ton of hard contact. I wasn't sure how much I was privy to the fact of how much hard contact he made. Like, it is pretty impressive. And then the other thing you could say too, he's only a .246 career hitter on the road compared to, you know, when you look at his home numbers. But to his credit, for his career, he has hit .307 in Wrigley Field. Small sample size, worth noting nonetheless. But I was so surprised with how much hard contact that guy makes.
I don't know how much I'd take the home road splits when people leave their, you know, because we all saw, oh, Nolan Arenado sucks on the road. Well, he was almost the MVP of the National League last year, and he's not at Coors. I think the problem with taking those numbers for anything other than a talking point is that guys get out of routine when they're on the road, right? Mm-hmm. They're not sleeping in their own bed. They're eating you know, still they these guys still get pretty good food unless you're in the minor leagues. On the road, right, they get their stipend for going and getting food, and they, but it's not home cooked. It's not some of these guys have some chefs or some pre-made food or whatever. They get in their routine, seeing the family, all that good stuff. So now that you're switching to what your home park is, I don't take the 246. I mean, he's not going to be a 246 hitter. He just won't.
No, and it's one of those things too where it's not necessarily, it's a talking point. That's actually what it is. Allows right. you to put an extra sentence or two in a write up and go from there. But it's more predicated on like the offensive game. So if Arenado was a guy, go back to Arenado, for example, you know, he hit 30, 40 home runs pretty much perennially. But if he was boosted on the back of Coors Field and he had a 65% ground ball rate, you know, that offensive game isn't going to shift away. Swanson's offensive game will play in any park. He's going to be fine. So, and that's when it comes back to the whole hard contact that he makes. So I like it for the Cubs. I really like it for Seiya Suzuki and other guys in that lineup as well. Sure. So just something to note there with the Cubs. We head out to the West to the Dodgers. J.D. Martinez and Noah Syndergaard head to the Dodgers. Reports on Twitter that J.D. Martinez took less money to go to the Dodgers. I didn't quite look into it, just saw the tweet about it. But interesting, the Dodgers are kind of stacking up on veterans there. Quick thoughts from me before I jump over to you. J.D. Martinez, still a professional hitter. He's going to be fine. Good lineup around him. Good park. Hard to hate that. And Noah Syndergaard, I think what we saw last year is what he's going to be. Can he get maybe more electrifying on the mound? Maybe, but I think the early Syndergaard days are done. He is now I'm going to look to go seven innings. If I strike out three or four guys, I'll be happy. But I'm going for quality starts, and I'm not exactly going to be a guy that lights up the radar gun anymore. That's just not his game.
Yep, I agree. It turns out that if you have a human being try to throw 100 miles an hour at max effort for every pitch, you break down. So it turns out if you only throw like 80% effort and you can still hit 95, that's pretty effective, right? That's what we saw him do last year. He wants to stay healthy at this point and get innings under his belt. So I think there's a little bit more strikeout game to come than what we saw last year. But yeah, in general, he's going more for quality starts. And the Dodgers have been whizzes with pitching of late.
He even said that.
Yeah. We saw what they did with Tyler Anderson last year, turned that guy into just, you had to play him every time he pitched. It was unbelievable. So yeah, I think he's relevant for fantasy. I don't think he's going to be dominating, but I think he's relevant. And J.D. Martinez, he's a professional hitter, like Freddie Freeman, basically, right? Like, these guys are going to take pitches. They're going to swing at stuff that they can hit. They're going to hit for decent average. Freeman's probably got more pop at this point in his career, but you're going to get a pretty good batting average, and you're going to get, I don't know, J.D. Martinez could probably still be worth 25, maybe 30 homers.
Yep. I agree with you there. And one quick one, I want to get to jump into the American League, talk about the AL East. But one thing I do want to read, I want one word, just one word reaction to what I'm about to read you. So Matt Carpenter agreed to a one-year deal with the Padres. There's a player option for 2024. Per Ken Rosenthal, Carpenter is guaranteed $12 million and could earn a maximum of $21 million over 2 years if he, again, exercises player option, hits all of his escalators, hits every single incentive. So Matt Carpenter, the reclamation project that we worked to swing, went to the Yankees, played well, could get $21 million over the next 2 years from the Padres. One word reaction.
One word?
Mine was whoa.
Yeah. I would go with that too. My advice to Carpenter is keep the stash.
Yes.
Clearly the stash is working for the power and the money. So keep the stash there. I don't know. I think he'll probably be platooned in whatever configuration the Padres decide to use him.
Yep.
I can't imagine he would play the field at this point. He's got to be like a DH candidate, right?
Has to be.
I don't know. Would you take a late round flyer on him?
Yeah, as long as the league has daily moves, you'd have to do it that way.
Yes. If you have weekly moves, you can't touch Matt Carpenter because he's only going to play like half the games a week.
Yep. And if and even if they have a week where they're going to face seven righties, come the sixth inning when they bring in a lefty, Carpenter's getting yanked. So just not worth it. Not worth it there. But let's get to the American League. And let's start with the American League East, because that's the one that's got a lot of headlines, the one we got to talk about. So the Yankees, the way I kind of look at the Yankees offseason is, for the most part, they did what they needed to do. So they brought back Rizzo, which was great for Rizzo's fantasy value. It's going to be at its peak in Yankee Stadium, so that is good. They brought back Aaron Judge, saved the fan base, and brought in Carlos Rodon, another ace that they needed. 6 years, $162 million. If he stays healthy, could be a nice, I hate to say bargain because it's a lot of money, but a nice deal overall for a very talented left-hander. The only thing I don't agree with that the Yankees have done this offseason so far that I completely disagree with, that you can't really sell me on, is inking the general manager to another couple years. That is the biggest head scratcher, I think, from the offseason. Pay Judge, blank check, fine. $162 million for Rodon. Bring back Anthony Rizzo, cool. Resign Cashman for four more years, basically because he hasn't had a losing season, I think is what I saw. I don't know about that one.
Yeah, we all know how vocal I've been about Brian Cashman. I've been calling for a couple of years now for Cashman to be fired. I'm sorry, winning seasons don't count for anything in New York. It's yep. World Series or bust. And two, you know, I don't really count the late 90s World Series as his, even though he was GM, because it was, you know, his predecessor, Stick, who put together those rosters. So I don't really count the three in the late 90s as his. I'll give him credit for, you know, the 2001 and then the 2009. But still, he's been GM since 96, and he's got basically two titles he can account for. That's not enough in nearly 30 years at the helm of the, what's previously been the richest organization in baseball. Now the team down the way in Queens is. So I agree with you on Judge, although the back end of that contract is going to suck, because anybody yes. 6'7" is going to go downhill faster than everybody else. I think we talked about on the podcast before that of big hitters, so guys that are 6'6" or above after the age of 30, counting their offensive WAR. So this doesn't include anything but base running and what they do with a bat in their hand. Adam Wainwright is the fifth highest WAR bat in baseball history of anybody that's 6'6" or above after the age of 30. That's not great. We're not talking about what he's done on a mound for the last 10 years. We're just talking about what he did in the batter's box, right? And that includes when he tore his Achilles running to first base, right? So that's not great that you can't find at least five active baseball players with a WAR better than, like, two. So, look, if he brings our colleague James Grande said, if he brings a ring – he'll eat the back half of the contract. Okay. Fine, I guess. The Carlos Rodon signing, I think $27 million a year for basically a co-ace is perfectly fine in my book. Mm-hmm. So the fact that even with all of the moves that the Mets made, there's a tweet I saw that put the Mets and the Yankees rotations up against each other, and almost everybody said they would take the Yankees rotation over the Mets, which are anchored by Scherzer and Verlander. Right? So I don't know if I'm willing to go quite that far. I think some stuff has to go right for the Yankees. But it's certainly a lot deeper than it was like 3 weeks ago. So, and there's some concern in the write-up that I did about Carlos Rodon, both the separate write-up and in the tracker. There's been some people that have been concerned about basically a 2.5 pitch pitcher lasting in Yankee Stadium. And I comped them to Kevin Gausman, who went from the Giants to the Blue Jays last year and is basically a 2.5 pitch pitcher. And he did fine. Like his ERA was mid threes, right? Not great. But if you look at FIP, XFIP, Sierra, whatever else you want to look at, they were all sub three. Okay, that's fine. He had lower home run per nine than in either of the 2 years in San Francisco. So I think Rodon will be fine. Park factors, I think he's actually better in the AL East than he is in the NL West. So So I like that signing. But I agree with you, Cashman needs to go. And if you're unsure of Cashman, tie him to Boone. Boone's contract expires at the end of 2024. Have Cashman's expire then, and you can make a decision on both the manager and the GM at the same time. Why you're giving the GM a four-year deal, it's not like a college football coach where you can't convince a guy to come to a team because the GM might leave in a year. Like, once a guy is signed and paid, who cares who's running the league, running the team? So, yeah, that was a bad move by the Yankees.
And when you look at it with Rodon, I talked about it too in like the tracker and stuff, is he's fastball slider. That's what he is. He'll mix in another pitch here and there. But both of those pitches are so darn good. And here's the thing. These two sentences, like, they both can be true. Rodon can experience a slight home run bump in 2023 pitching at Yankee Stadium. It's also very possible that over the last 2 years, his home run per nine is 0.7. That can go up to 0.8 or 0.9 and still be fine. Like, that's not even a worry. He was above one each year from 2016 to 2020, and he still can be the high strikeout guy, and he's really honed things in. I'm not worried. Rodon's still going to be a co-ace in reality. He's going to be an ace in fantasy formats in 2023 because he's so elite on a per inning basis. I don't see. The only issue I see with Rodon, and it's not necessarily a knock on him, but from the early years and just like pretty much any pitcher in the game, home runs aren't going to break this contract. It's going to be if he can't stay healthy. That's the only way. If he lets up some home runs and pitches to a 3.5 ERA and strikes out over a batter per inning and the Yankees are winning games, that doesn't matter. If he's hurt and not out there, that's when this whole $162 million deal is going to go down the drain. This is all health dependent. That's all this is.
Agreed. And also, those of you concerned about, oh, well, Yankee Stadium's a small park. Well, San Francisco's better for right-handed hitters than Yankee Stadium is. And so pitching from the left side, lefties are basically have no shot. The short porch in Yankee Stadium in right field doesn't come into play with a lefty on the mound. And if you're concerned about the other parks, well, Baltimore has the deepest left field in baseball now, so righties have trouble hitting homers. Toronto can be hit and miss. Tampa is not a very good hitter's park, to be perfectly honest. And Fenway has a 37-foot wall in left field. So, like, you know, I think he's in a pretty good spot.
He'll be just fine. And if you're worried about lefties against Rodon, you shouldn't be.
No.
Just go look at the numbers. Good luck.
He's unhittable.
He is. And it's his arsenal. Sure, he's only two pitches. Two and a half pitches, as you want to say, but that fastball works against both. And if you're a right-handed hitter, he's going to backflip that slider to death and put you away. And if you're a lefty, he is going to make you look like, I believe it's, was it John Kruk in the All-Star game against Randy Johnson, just flailed up there because he didn't want to be there?
Well, yeah, but Randy also threw a fastball behind Kruk the first hit.
That's true.
Kruk really wanted nothing to do with Randy Johnson.
There could be some swings reminiscent of that. Lefties against Rodon. That's how it comes.
I mean, pitching infield loves Rodon. Like, I put an entire clip of his in the write-up, and it's just gross.
Yeah. Let's go to Toronto. Let's take a look at them before we talk about maybe the most polarizing team in the division. But Toronto, it comes down to this. Kevin Kiermaier, one-year deal. Great defensive outfielder. See what it does with the bat. Chris Bassett, very good for that rotation. He's a new arm coming to the American League East. He was with Oakland prior to the Mets. So really, when we look at the Blue Jays, this team is anchored by the bats. They got a couple good arms there. Hopefully that they can continue to go. Does Toronto have enough horsepower, or have they gotten better enough with really only signings of Bassett and Kiermaier here this offseason? Not to mention some of the departures.
Yeah, the Teoscar Hernandez one was interesting to me. Trading him out, that is, and replacing him with Kiermaier, who is great when he's on the field, but it's when he's on the field, right? The guy hasn't stayed healthy in a very long time. And if you're going, well, Tampa's outfield is AstroTurf, well, so is Toronto's. So that doesn't really help him in the way he plays. It does get George Springer out of center field, so that may help Springer a bit. I don't know. They've got a pretty good rotation, though. Mm-hmm. When you look at it, putting Bassett in there is probably their third starter, maybe fourth. Because they got Manoa, Gausman, Berrios, Bassett, and Kikuchi. And then, by the way, Ryu may be healthy enough to come back in the second half. He's coming back from Tommy John from June of last year. So he could be an August, September guy. And then you got to figure out what you're doing with the rest of them. And that bullpen's pretty good. You know, there are some pieces out there available still that they could make some moves. And, you know, so right now I think this offense is pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of pop there between Bichette, Guerrero, Kirk, and Chapman. They do have three catchers, so they could deal a premium catcher for some help at some point, because they have Kirk, Jansen, and then they have a guy named Gabriel Moreno, who's one of the top catching prospects in baseball coming up. So yeah, I think, look, they were picked to go toe-to-toe with the Yankees last year. They basically did. And I think they can do that again this year. I don't see any massive hole in this lineup. I mean, if Kiermaier gets injured, okay, but you've still got a guy like Kevin Biggio on the bench and Santiago Espinal, who was decent, on the bench. And, you know, they can make some moves. So it's pretty – their starting pitching staff might be the best in the American League.
Yes, and the thing is, they might not have the star power of a Cole, Rodon, top, but you can make a case five deep if you're taking it from one to five. Toronto's rotation is very, very good.
Like, I mean, right now in the American League, I would put Toronto, Houston, and probably the Yankees as the top three rotations. And
probably have to put New York, yeah.
I can't tell you who right now I would put definitively number one. Maybe the Yankees for Cole and Rodon, but I mean, Manoah was outstanding last year.
Yes, so very, very much so. Okay. We have to talk about him.
Yes.
Because it's very interesting.
Yes.
The Boston Red Sox. Justin Turner, okay, whatever. Kenley Jansen, the bullpen was arguably the team's best, one of their top strengths. So it seems like a luxury to get Jansen, depending on like the other, how you look at their lineup. Paid a good bit for Masataka Yoshida. One could argue that the Mets guy, Senga, was probably worth the contract that Yoshida got. But
yeah, they should have flipped for sure.
To each their own. And then the Red Sox, now there's all this stuff coming. I'm cheating a little bit here because it's not exactly in this free agent class. I don't know if they're going to re-sign Devers.
I don't know if they will either. I saw that report too. And
did you see the galaxies apart quote?
Yeah.
That's not a mincing of words.
No, the last time I heard that about a player for them was Bogart. This is going to be like right now. And I don't remember. I haven't checked since the Justin Turner signing, but I can't imagine it's changed. They are 18th in payroll for this year. 18th. Boston. Everybody's, they always go toe to toe with the Yankees. They are 18th in payroll. You know who's ahead of them? Detroit. Detroit, I'm pretty sure, is like $7 million ahead of Boston in payroll, or within $7 million either way, right? Seattle's ahead of them. Like, come on. Like, what are you doing? Like, also, by the way, why are you signing Justin Turner? What position is Justin Turner going to play?
It sounds like he's going to be the DH, and then he is first base insurance for Tristan Casas.
Yeah. I mean, okay, because you got Devers. But, like, here's the thing. You didn't sign Justin Turner for, like, a two-year deal so that you could then say, we have a third baseman in case Devers leaves. Like, this is just a weird – their lineup right now is Masataka – this is from Roster Resource. Yoshida leading off, which probably happens, although he may be a number two hitter. Trevor Story, Devers, Justin Turner, Verdugo, Kike Hernandez, Casas, Christian Arroyo, and Reese McGuire.
Yep.
And the bench is Connor Wong, who, great. You got him from the Dodgers for Mookie Betts. Great. He's like one of the only good pieces. Unproven, really. We can't even say good because he's unproven. And they let the other guy go, Jeter Downs. Dalbec couldn't hit a barn standing next to it. Rob Refsnyder is somehow still in baseball and yet only 32 years old, which is shocking to me. And we haven't even touched on the starting rotation's not great either.
You don't like a rotation led by Chris Sale for all 87 innings that we'll probably get?
I mean, yeah. And then you got Pivetta as a number two. And who knows if Garrett Whitlock's going to stay in the rotation full year because they can't seem to figure out what they're doing with him between the pen and the rotation. And by the way, he was a key part of why the pen was good enough last year because he was fantastic. But, like, is he going to stay in the rotation or go to the pen? Paxton, okay. Cool.
And 70 innings, that'll be fun.
Brian Bello, like, where's the rest of the – I don't know. And I'm not just trying to crap on him because I'm a Yankees fan and whatever, but, like, this is like, – our Boston sports fans on the staff will tell you it's been, like, John Impempo's ready to jump out a window with the Red Sox. Like, it's not – I have no idea what they're doing.
To me, as I look at this, and I don't expect this to be a hot take at all when you look at that the Red Sox finished last in the division last year – I think they do it again, and it might the gap might be more than last year, if we're being honest.
Yeah, because Baltimore's got guys that are coming up. They get a full year of Adley Rutschman. They have some improvement in pitching. John Means should be back at some point. We should see Grayson Rodriguez, who would have come up last year. He's not gotten injured. DL Hall should be better, right? So, like, they've got guys coming, and they've made – some decent, I mean, Adam Frazier, we'll talk about this, but Adam Frazier is a pretty decent signing at second base. So, like, they got better, and Tampa gets Tyler Glasnow back.
Yep.
Like, their offense is pretty good to begin with, right? And then they've got depth for days because they can call up whoever the heck they want to from the minor leagues. And then their rotation, Zach Eflin was signed to be their fourth starter. So they have McClanahan, who could have won the Cy Young. Glasnow, Rasmussen, Eflin, and Springs. That's a far better rotation.
Well, like, when you look at the other teams in the AL East, like, look at the fourth and fifth starters for each team. So, you know, we look at Toronto. Bassett would probably be what? The two in Boston?
Yes.
Okay. So then we'll go to – that's Blue Jays. If we go to the Orioles, I mean, it just depends who you put in four. Let's just say for the sake of this, Grayson Rodriguez, he's probably their at worst three.
Probably.
And we've hardly seen him.
Right.
And then you look at the Rays.
He's one of the best – if not the best pitching prospect in baseball.
Exactly. Then the Rays, say Springs, he's probably at worst Boston's three.
Right.
At worst. And then you go to – the Yankees, it doesn't matter whatever arm you take out of the back end of their part. At worst, basically every team
right now it's Nestor Cortez. At worst, a
three in Boston.
Yeah, right now it's Nestor Cortez, who you can make an argument would be a number two in Boston.
Yep, that tells you. And then it's not even that we can say when you definitively look at Boston's offense, I'm taking Toronto over them. I'm taking the Yankees over them. I'm so high on so many of these Orioles youngsters, and even the Rays.
Yeah,
at worst they're even. At worst, there is nothing. I don't think there's anything that the Boston has the best of in this division, and they don't even have the best budget saving mentality because that Tampa Bay's.
Well, okay, there. I will give them the best third baseman in the division.
Okay, that's a little niche.
Okay,
I'm saying overall.
Yeah, but I mean, I would take Devers.
Yeah, okay, but a year from now, we're probably talking about Devers signing somewhere else, and he's the highlight of our podcast that episode that week.
Yeah, I mean, Boston won 78 games. Last year, do they finish under that this year? Because yeah, I think so.
I do too.
You can't take Bogarts and JD Martinez out of this lineup and replace them with Justin Turner and like Yoshida,
who's going to need some adjustment. There's going to be some time to adjust, so that it might be a little slower start for him. But you look, Boston was five games behind Baltimore for fourth in the AL East last year. I think that gap is widened, and yeah, it might not even be Baltimore in fourth.
The Orioles traded a starter and their closer at the deadline and their first baseman, Trey Mancini, who was like the heart of their team, right? They traded three key pieces at the deadline and still finished above 500 and were in the wild card running until maybe the last week of the season.
Yep. Boston is clear fifth. I don't want to take too much time much more time with the American League East, but I do want to touch on one thing. I talked about it in the free agent tracker, so go check it out. But Adam Frazier is a hell of a signing for Baltimore. He's a quote-unquote veteran bat. He can play what feels like five different positions, and he, at the very least, if some of those youngsters have a slower ramp up to the year, or they're just trying to maintain some parts of that lineup, they can stick Frazier in a bunch of different spots. He'll help turn the lineup over at the bottom of the order. I think that's one of the better signings in this whole division, even though it's 1/19 of the star power of some of the other names that we've seen inked deals in this division.
Agreed. Like, he didn't have the greatest year in Seattle last year, but that is also one of the hardest hitter parks in baseball. It's like one of the lowest BABIP parks in all of the league. Typically speaking, he's a pretty high average guy. He'll steal you double-digit bags. He's a professional guy. He's not going to get beat all that often on things that he shouldn't get beat on. I think it's a great sneaky signing. He may not be hugely fantasy relevant, but in reality, that's a great signing.
Yep, absolutely. Help turn the lineup over. We'll come back, finish up with the AL East at the end with the final question with them. But head over to the AL West. Astros, they lost Justin Verlander. That stinks. But if there's any team that could probably withstand to lose their definitive ace and still have a top through two or three rotation in the American League, Houston was the only one that was going to be able to do that. So they are going to be just fine there. And one could argue that their lineup heading into 2023 just might be better.
It's definitively better. Like, Jose Abreu is a huge upgrade over Yuli Gurriel.
Yes.
Like, Gurriel was great, but he was starting to age and you could see it. Jose Abreu is 3 years removed from being the AL MVP.
And the thing that gets me,
by the way, he's coming off of a season where he hit .304.
And you look at roster resource, the projected starting lineup versus right-handed pitching. Kyle Tucker and Jeremy Peña are right now their sixth and seventh hitter. Yeah. Now, I don't know if it'll actually be like that, but just to say that, you're starting off with the top seven of Altuve, Brantley, Bregman, Alvarez, Abreu, Tucker, Peña. Good freaking luck.
And then Chaz McCormick's not terrible. He's a clutch dude. Martin Maldonado, okay, it's a catcher, right? Like, what are we expecting from them? But their rotation is Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, Lance McCullers, Luis Garcia, and Jose Urquidy is their fifth starter. Not one of those guys had an ERA higher than 3.95 last year.
Yep.
And all of them, except for McCullers, started at least 25 games. So it's not like they're small sample sizes, right? Like, McCullers was 227 in 8 starts. Okay, but he was coming off of injury. The other guys, Valdez, 282 in 31 games. Javier, 2.54 in 25 games. Luis Garcia, 3.72 in 28 games. And your fifth starter is Jose Urquidy at 3.94 in 28 games. Yep. That's just ludicrous.
And
by the way, they got three dudes in AAA that could all come up and start in Hunter Brown, Forrest Whitley, and Sean Dubin.
Yep. That I was going to point out. And Brown looked darn good last year. And
oh, my God. Brown is probably the guy I fell in love with the most last year in terms of, like, next ace caliber guy. He's that.
Yeah. And then also, too, their bullpen is still good. Like,
yes.
I don't know. I mean, to find a hole with this team, you're going to have you're poking, you're grasping at straws.
Maybe,
like,
catcher.
Yeah, sure. And they've been pretty adamant that they're out looking at stuff.
For everybody.
Like, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And they've got Wilson, that would have been cool.
I mean, Corey Lee is going to be a great power bat when he figures out how to make contact.
That's a big win, but agreed.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is, too, they have the ability to wait for that.
Uh-huh.
Like,
it's cool. Ridiculous.
Yep, this team is loaded, and they're going to be good. They lost Verlander, added Abreu, you know, brought back Michael Brantley. Other than getting Abreu, a lot of it was kind of maintain what we have, go out and get guys. I mean, they have to be.
I guess the only questionable thing was, why did Rafael Montero get a 3-year deal? That seemed a little steep. They got the money, so may as well use it. Lock up dudes who you love. They're not going to have to pay Jeremy Peña very much money for the next, like, 6 years. They're fine there. Altuve's there long term. Abreu's on a 3-year deal now. Bregman, I think, is the next guy up for a big deal, if I'm not mistaken. And by the way, if Corey Lee can't figure it out, they have Yolner Diaz in AAA, who he's a pretty good up-and-coming catcher, first base outfield prospect guy, too.
Yep. So Astros are good. Enough said about them. Yep. Mariners haven't been active in terms of signing people, but they're trading for what feels like everybody. So amidst all the deals, Colton Wong, Cooper Hummel, Teoscar Hernandez, led by, you know, their pitching staff, they didn't bring anybody in, but Castillo, Gilbert, Ray, and George Kirby is a hell of a top four as well. With all the moves that the Mariners made, are they better than last year's team, do you think?
If Teoscar Hernandez has a better year than he did in Toronto, then yes. I don't think it's enough to overtake the Astros.
Agreed.
I don't think that they're, like, it's a very good team, but Houston has given us no reason to doubt what they can do. Obviously, they are the defending World Series champs. They've been to six straight ALCSs. That's the only team ever in the history of baseball to do that. It just seems like they need another, like, Seattle needs another contact bat to me. They have an awful lot of pop, but not necessarily a whole heap ton of contact there. And I think there's some lingering questions as to exactly what Jared Kelenic is going to be. Colton Wong had a heck of a season last year. See if he can keep it up. Eugenio Suarez, look, the guy's going to hit for a bazillion homers and then not make a lot of contact for base hits. So overall, I think they are number two. I think they're second in this division. That starting rotation is going to keep them in a lot of games. And yes, the bullpen can just figure it out. So yep, that's my view on the Mariners.
Rangers have been a little quiet of late, but they came out with the big one of getting Jacob deGrom in from the Mets. So he immediately slots in when healthy as their number one pitcher. So you look at roster resources, it has DeGrom, Martin Perez, and John Gray as the top three. I don't know if they're just doing that to put a lefty in the mix there, but to me, John Gray is the two. I know Perez was solid last year, but I like John Gray as the two. Obviously, they found a lot of money in recent years, went out and got Semien, Seager. I love, love, love. I don't know if it's low or I think it's low, Nathaniel Lowe. I think he's the low, and the guy in Tampa Bay is the Lau.
Yes, Brandon Lau and Nate Lowe.
That's it. Yep.
Nate and there's Lowe. Josh Lowe in Tampa that's still there too. So,
you know. And then, I mean, you got Adelis Garcia. The bottom of the lineup's a little bit concerning with Texas. I think they're going in for the splash moves. I have the questions I have with this year are more about not necessarily the players they brought in, but it's just, you know, can, based on the starting lineup, can a bottom third of Brad Miller, Leody Taveras, and Josh Smith turn over the lineup enough to get to your boys? And can DeGrom stay healthy? That's the big question.
Yeah, I think they're a year away, to be honest. Look, they made some other splashes with Andrew Heaney and Jake Odorizzi in the starting rotation. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, Andrew Heaney's got a heck of a curveball, but like nothing else. Odorizzi was good for Atlanta, but it seems like everybody's good for Atlanta. So we'll see what happens there. I think this is about waiting it out for another year until some of their homegrown talent can come up, like Sam Huff, their catching prospect, can come up. They've got some other, you know, Justin Foscue is a second base guy who's pretty close. Luis Angel Acuna, which, by the way, is the brother of Ronald Acuna. He's in Double A. He could be a quick mover this year because he really seemed to put it together last year. And then, you know, they've got some, you know, Bubba Thompson is a guy that I would be looking to add right now in Dynasties. But they've got some starting pitching depth coming up too. So, like, you've got, you know, a couple of the guys they've drafted recently, like Cole Wynn, Owen White's still a little far down in Double A. Jack Leiter is in Triple A. They obviously just drafted Leiter's college teammate there. I'm blanking on his name. The guy the Mets drafted, and then Kumar Rocker. So they've got some depth, but I think these signings are about, hey, let's get a couple of key pieces in place, and then we'll turn the roster over next year when the prospects come. But I don't know. That's an awful lot of money to tread water.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. Their other team in the AL West. There is another one after the Angels, but I don't know what all is to be said.
I mean,
about
if they're
them.
AAA, I put in the notes for the show, do we really need to talk about them? Like, it's just embarrassing.
So when you look at, and you look at the Angels, Trout, Otani, there you go. Taylor Ward's in there. Hopefully you get a healthy Rendon, Hunter Renfroe, and Urshela at the bottom of the, or the bottom half of the lineup should be fine there. Otani, they brought in Anderson, Patrick Sandoval. Okay, they're okay there. And the bullpen, Carlos Estevez just might close for them if they don't go to some of the other guys they have there. I just, at this point, I'm just not sure if it's the Angels. They have all the talent. It just seems like there's almost an institutional curse that just does not allow this team to reach what it can be. I mean, you have two of the premier players of this era, I guess you could say, with Trout and Otani, and you don't really have anything to show for it yet. So they just need health. It's going to come down to health, and I still don't think it's enough for them in this division.
I don't think so either. I mean, I think it's a sneaky good lineup, 1-9. I think it's actually a sneaky good lineup. I really like Logan Ohapi, who they got from the Phillies as their catching prospect last year in the deal that sent Thor to the Phillies for the second half of the year. But I'm with you. I don't know that it's enough to look. It may keep them third in this division, which gives them an outside shot at a playoff chance given the expanded playoffs now. But if Rendon doesn't stay healthy, I don't know that they make the playoffs, right? It seems like an awful lot to put on one guy, but Rendon at his best can be a 30 home run, 290 gold glove third baseman, right? We already know that Trout is battling some degenerative back thing, so he might move to left field at some point. Otani, he's a free agent after this year. So they got to show him that they can actually compete. Otherwise, that guy's going to be gone for like $500 million after this season. So, and I don't know that there's a whole lot coming from their minor leagues right now. Like the Angels farm system, try as they might, they have not been great at developing homegrown talent. Like Joe Adell is still there in the minor leagues, but his taste of the majors did not really go all that well last year. I mean, he's still just 24, so he's got a shot, but I'm with you. They need guys to stay healthy, and then maybe they eke into a playoff spot because they're the third team in the AL West, but that's about the best you can hope for with the Angels this year.
Yep, I agree. Last team in there, Oakland, just go look at their lineup and you'll
see. And then throw up.
Yep, and you'll see why we're carrying on here. Head to the AL Central. Obviously, White Sox lose Jose Abreu, but Mike Clevinger, one-year deal, okay. Andrew Benintendi, five-year deal.
That's confusing to me.
Yeah, the annual amount isn't bad, but, I mean, he's just a guy. He's a corner outfielder that hits .275, maybe 15 homers, and, like, 8 stolen bases.
I mean, he plays a very good defensive left field, but, like, I mean, I guess they're doing it so they get Eloy Jimenez out of the outfield and they just have him DH so he doesn't go, like, rip his shoulder off on the outfield wall again. But I don't know, man. 5 years for a guy who, in the middle of a playoff run, couldn't stay healthy and then also couldn't make contact once the Yankees got him. Like, he could not make contact. It was I don't know. Do they have enough bats to win this division? Probably. If Tim Anderson, Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, Yoan Moncada, Andrew Vaughn, Yasmani Grandal, Gavin Sheets all do what they're supposed to do, I think they have enough bats. Will that happen? I don't know.
And there's enough talent in the rotation. I mean, Dylan Cease is a stud. Maybe Lynn or Giolito are fine. Clevinger can be okay, healthy. And Kopech obviously has an immense amount of potential. I think one thing we'll have to see with the White Sox is there's a lot of teams poking around Liam Hendricks right now. So have to see if they deal him.
If they're off to a bad start, I would assume that they would deal Hendricks at that point.
So you don't expect him to get dealt before the season?
No.
Okay.
I think they have every idea that they will compete with. Look, they were leading the division for like half the year last year, and then they fell off late. And they don't have Tony La Russa in the dugout, which is actually addition by subtraction, because that guy can't manage for crap. He should just go back to drinking and trying not to drive. He was terrible. He intentionally walked Trey Turner in a 1-2 count like twice. Like, who does that? So I think they have enough to finish ahead of the Twins, Tigers, and Royals. The Guardians seem to be on some sort of magical run last year, but I think they have enough to win. But if they don't get off to a great start, I could see Liam Hendricks being a trade piece halfway through the year.
Yep. We'll see. There's teams poking around him now. If they're doing it now and they don't deal him now, come
because here's the thing. Like, they have Garrett Crochet coming back at some point, right? He had Tommy John last April, so he should be back fairly soon. But other than that, there's not really any prospects to speak of that are that close at this point. Like Oscar Colas is getting a lot of attention, but he's still probably a year away, I would imagine. Yoelqui Cespedes, again, getting some attention, but he's probably a year away. Hey, you want to know who's playing outfield in AAA with those two dudes?
Who?
A guy named Billy Hamilton.
Yep.
The actual Billy Hamilton.
The fast one.
Yes, the 32-year. Somehow he's still only 32, which I think Fangraphs is lying to me on that one. But yes, they signed him to a minor league deal. Not that it matters, but just find it entertaining.
Yep.
So I think they finished second in the division.
Am I crazy for loving what the Guardians have done this offseason, mainly with Josh Bell and Mike Zunino signings?
I think the Josh Bell, look, I wanted the Nats to sign Josh Bell back. Like, I thought they could have gotten him for not that much money, and it turns out you could have, because I don't think the Guardians spent all that much on Josh Bell.
Mm-hmm.
2-year deal to shore up first base. Awesome, because they haven't been able to find a first baseman in like 5 years that's capable of playing first base. And Zunino's just there to keep Bo Naylor from having to play every day so they can bring him along at the pace they want to. I didn't think they needed all that much help. I mean, they won 92 games last year. Right? Like, that rotation's pretty good. So
bullpen's fine.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with anything they did. And by the way, if you look at my prospect rankings, they have one of the best farm systems in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So they got people coming. But yeah, I think they're perfectly fine. I think they win the division again. I don't see any reason why they shouldn't.
Yep. I agree there. I love what they did. I love Josh Bell. I love what he's going to do. Provides protection for Jose Ramirez in that lineup, and just is going to keep things going on. Another and power bat.
It's two switch hitters back to back with Ramirez and Bell, so you can't even game plan against them in late innings because they can just face off with the opposite hand.
Yep. Love what they did. Let's go to Minnesota. Gary Sanchez out, Christian Vasquez in, and Joey Gallo comes in on a 1-year deal. Just kind of meh on these. They're fine. I like the Vasquez one more than the Gallo one, but I get it. You know, low risk, potentially high reward with Gallo, and just see if he can return to form.
So here's my question. How many thousands of dollars are they going to pay per strikeout for Gallo? Because it's like an $11 million deal, right? Like a 1-year, $11 million.
Probably a lot.
I mean, the guy's going to, I don't know. I don't even think it's like the shift that hurt him, because he's not even making enough contact to hit it into the shift. Christian Vasquez, that's an upgrade to me, a catcher.
Yes.
Like, you might lose pop, but you're going to gain contact and defensive awareness and ability.
Yep.
Kyle Farmer is a backup middle infielder, is nice. I like that move. The biggest question for me is, can their rotation stay healthy? If their rotation stays healthy, I think they can fight for anywhere between second and third. I mean, they might go toe-to-toe with the White Sox here for second.
Yep. Yeah, but they're just meh. They're fine. They're whatever. They are what they are, to be honest. Yeah. And then pitching-wise, probably like their rotation the best amongst what they have on their team. Oh no, I like their bullpen a little bit too, mainly just because of Yoan Duran. But Sonny Gray, Joe Ryan, Tyler Molly, Kenta Maeda, and Bailey Ober is not a bad little rotation.
No, it's not. But the question is, like, can they get everybody to stay healthy? Because you've got Kenta Maeda missed all of last year, right? And then you've got, based on last year's numbers, the most starts made in that rotation was Joe Ryan at 27.
Yep.
Sonny Gray, 24, Molly at 23, and Bailey Ober at 11. Now, he was kind of up and down and injured and whatever, but they just need health out of that rotation, and I think they can be okay.
And then lastly in the division, Tigers get Matthew Boyd and Michael Lorenzen, okay. Royals get Ryan Yarbrough and Jordan Lyles, okay.
I actually think the Royals, I actually like the Royals better than the Tigers this year.
I think I would agree with you there.
And the offense for the Royals is sneaky good.
Correct.
Right? Like, you've got MJ Melendez, Bobby Witt Jr., who, by the way, is like one of the only rookies ever to hit 2020. Salvi is back, Vinny Pasquantino. If Alberto Mondesi can stay healthy, there's some sneaky good bat in the middle of the order. Edward Olivares, I don't know about yet, whatever, but I do like Drew Waters. Michael A. has been pretty good for the Royals.
Agreed.
Nicky Lopez was underrated last year, I thought. So, and you've got a guy named Hunter Dozier on the bench who was at one point the starting third baseman that everybody loved. Mm-hmm. So, starting rotations.
Bad.
Well, okay. So there was a tweet I saw the other day that said, like, pitchers with higher than 30% CSW, which is called plus swinging strike rate, which is whatever. Like, a lot of people like the stat. I'm not the biggest fan of it because the umps right now suck. So you're getting credit for umps being terrible. And then, so pitchers with higher than 30% CSW and lower than a 6% walk rate, Brady Singer was on that list.
Yeah, and I like Singer.
I saw him live. My wife and I went to a game last summer. They were playing the Tigers, actually. And Brady Singer started, and his stuff was pretty decent. I like, now, granted, Detroit's offense was terrible. And Javier Baez, I think, struck out more than he made contact. But he's got some sneaky good swing and miss stuff. I mean, he was a first-round pick, right? He anchored the Florida Gators lineup that got, like, four guys drafted in the first round. So, you know, look, it's okay. It's not full of star power. I do like the Ryan Yarbrough signing a little bit for them because I think he's sneaky interesting there. So we'll see, but I do like, I mean, I'm not saying the Royals win the division by any means. I just think they beat the Tigers.
Yeah, no, I agree there. So we'll go ahead. We're a little over time here, so we'll go ahead and wrap up this episode. But one last thing to leave you with, looking at the division, quick overlook of all of them, or I should say the whole American League. I'm probably going Yankees for the AL East. I'm 100% going Astros for the AL West. And then I like the Guardians in the Central. You agree, or you got anything different?
No, I would agree. What's your easiest one to predict, and which, like, how are you ranking these in terms of easiest and hardest to predict finishing spots?
I'm most confident about the Astros. I think they're far and away better than every team in that division. They're just so good. So
yeah,
I'm the most confident about the Astros. After that,
I think I'm most confident in the order of the AL West, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I would pin it. I know I'm most confident in the Astros. I'm confident with that division, how it's going to shake out. And then after that, I mean, the Central and the East are just, I kind of know the groupings of the teams.
Right, I could put it.
I just don't know the order, like how they're going to go. Like, you know, in the AL Central, Guardians and White Sox are one. I'm going with them as 1-2. So I like the Guardians to win it, White Sox 2, and then from there, Twins are definitely 3. I'd probably go
Twins, Royals, Tigers.
Correct, and that's probably what I would do. And then the AL East, like, it's Yankees, Blue Jays 1 and 2, and then Rays and O's, who's there, and then Boston's 5th. Like, for most of these divisions, I know 1 and 5. It's just a matter of how 2, 3, and 4 shake out, and most of the time, it's really how 2 and 3 shake out.
Yeah, for me, I think the AL East is most akin to my NL Central, where, like, we knew the Reds would be last. Well, not that we know, but like we're pretty confident the Reds are going to be last. The Red Sox are going to be last in the AL East. Pretty sure the Blue Jays are second. Pretty sure the Yankees are first. After that, third and fourth, I would say it depends on who gets the most out of their younger guys. And right now I would lean towards Rays being third and O's being fourth, but I could totally see it flip if some guys don't stay healthy or they get or the O's get more out of their starting rotation than we think. That could flip, but I would say that there. AL West, I'm going Astros, Mariners. The A's are clearly last. They're terrible. They're horrifyingly bad. I would be shocked if they won more than 50 games. But I have a hard time trying to figure out if it'd be the Rangers or Angels in third place for me. And the AL Central, it's the Guardians, the White Sox, Twins, Royals, Tigers. That's how I see it.
Yep, I think I would agree with you there. So while we continue to go through MLB free agency, check out fantasyalarm.com. We'll be updating the MLB free agent tracker as new signings roll in. So keep an eye for all the content there. And then obviously every fantasy baseball season, there's a particular publication, online publication seems to come out. So keep an eye out for any news coming about that in the coming days, weeks, wherever it ends up being. But till then, check out all the great content at fantasyalarm.com. I'm on Twitter at Colby R. Conway. Find Matt on Twitter at The Salesman. Give us both a follow. And I'm not sure when our next episode will be here, so keep an eye out on the, like I said, keep an eye out for the MLB free agent trackers. That's where we're updating everything, and just keep an eye out for any new episodes that drop. So for this edition of the Fantasy Alarm Fantasy Baseball Podcast, I'm Colby Conway, that's Matt Sells, and we will see you next time.